Chapter 34, Martin Luther's New Ideas. Martin Luther's List. When Spain and Portugal started to send their ships to West Africa and the Americas, a new time in history began. You will often hear this time called the Age of Discovery or the Age of Exploration. For the first time, countries such as Spain, Portugal, France, and England were not just trying to grow bigger by conquering the land next to their borders. Instead, they grew by planting colonies, new settlements in lands far away. While these European countries were expanding their power into other parts of the world, the Catholic Church was trying to keep its power in Europe. For most of the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church, the Christian Church led by the Pope in Rome, was as powerful as any country. The Catholic Church had its own laws and its own citizens. The Pope could even tell kings what to do, and often they obeyed him. But as the Age of Exploration began, a monk named Martin Luther began to criticize the Catholic Church. Martin Luther grew up in the part of Europe that we now call Germany. His parents wanted him to be a lawyer, but Martin Luther decided to join a monastery instead. As a monk, he had to beg for food and money. He spent long hours praying and studying the Bible. Martin Luther chose this difficult, demanding life because he was afraid that God would punish him for his sins unless he worked day and night to make God happy. He wrote that he was walled around with the terror and agony of God's anger. Martin Luther did everything that the church told him he should do. He went on pilgrimage to Rome. He prayed in front of the relics of saints. He crawled on hands and knees, reciting the Lord's Prayer, to show how sorry he was for his sins, but he was still afraid that God would be displeased with him. After he had been a monk for 5 years, Martin was sent to teach at a university in the German city of Wittenberg. He taught his students about the book of Romans in the New Testament. He spent hours studying this book, and as he studied, he began to change his mind about what God wanted from him. He thought to himself, "The book of Romans doesn't tell me that I have to earn God's love by working hard to be good. No, no! It says that God gives me the power to believe in Him and the power to be good because He already loves me." This changed Martin's way of thinking about God. Later he said, "It seemed to me as if I had been born again and as if I had entered paradise through newly opened doors." Think about it this way. Imagine that you have two aunts. Both of them say that they love you, but the first aunt lives in a very clean house with a white rug on the floor. When you come to visit her, she opens the door and looks at you very carefully to see if your hands and shoes and face are clean before she lets you in. She invites you to have hot chocolate and cookies with her, but you have to sit on a white velvet couch while you eat. During your snack, she keeps checking to see whether you are sitting straight and chewing with your mouth closed. When you drip a little bit of hot chocolate on the sofa, she gets rubber gloves, a big bucket of hot soapy water, and a sponge. She makes you scrub at the stain, but it won't come off. So she shouts, "Leave this house at once and don't come back until you learn how to eat neatly." Now imagine that you go to see the second aunt. She throws her door open and says, "I'm so glad to see you. Come in." And she hugs you even though you've been playing in the dirt. You get a little bit of mud on her apron, but she dusts it off and says, "Why don't you wash your hands before you have a snack?" The bathroom has good-smelling hand soap and big blue towels in it. After you wash your hands, she takes you into the kitchen and sits you down at a big wooden table for your cookies and hot chocolate. When you spill a little, she gives you a napkin and says, "That's not the worst thing that's been spilt on this table." When your snack is done, she says, "Let's go upstairs and do some finger painting in the playroom, and then you can have a bubble bath to wash off." Which aunt would you rather go see? The first aunt is a little bit like the way Martin Luther used to think of God. The second aunt is more like the way he learned to think about God after reading Romans. When Martin Luther looked around, he saw that many other people also seemed to have the wrong ideas about God, and he thought that the church's teachings made these wrong ideas stronger. The Catholic Church had begun to teach that God would only forgive sins if the sinners did penance, special deeds, like giving money to the poor or confessing their sins in public to show how sorry they were. But the church also taught that sinners could get out of doing penance by paying a certain amount of money to the church. This practice was called selling indulgences. Martin Luther believed that indulgences were wrong. He preached that God would forgive any sinner who believed in Jesus Christ, not just those who did penance or bought indulgences. Christ has nowhere commanded indulgences to be preached, he wrote, only the gospel. So he made a list of 95 reasons why indulgences were wrong. He nailed a copy of this list, called the 95 Theses, to the church door in Wittenberg. This was his way of inviting other churchmen to argue with him about his ideas. But Luther found that people all over Germany were interested in his list. Soon hundreds of people were discussing Martin Luther's 95 Theses. For the first time, people were beginning to say out loud that the Catholic Church might not always be right about God. Henry VIII's problem. Over in England, the King of England was delighted to hear about Martin Luther's new ideas. Before you can understand why the English King was so happy about the 95 Theses, you have to think for a moment about the history we've already learned. When the princes in the Tower disappeared, their uncle Richard became the King of England. But then Henry Tudor marched into England, killed Richard, and took the throne away. He became Henry VII, King of England. Henry VII had already fought a war to get England's throne. He didn't want another war to start after he died. He wanted to make sure that his son and his grandson and his great-grandson would all inherit the crown after him, peacefully and without any arguments. So when his oldest son, Arthur, was only 2, Henry VII arranged for him to get married to the 3-year-old daughter of the King of Spain. The two even had a wedding ceremony, with grown-ups standing in for them, since the groom fell asleep and the bride was busy chewing on the hem of her dress. This was called a proxy wedding. It meant that the two had to get married as soon as they were old enough. When Arthur was 15 and Catherine was 16, the prince and the princess had a real wedding. The young princess let down her hair, which came all the way to her feet, and danced with the prince. Everyone feasted and sang songs and hoped that the two would have children right away. Arthur and Catherine went away to live in a castle of their own, but only 6 months later, Arthur came down with a high fever and died. Now the heir to the throne was Arthur's little brother Harry. Henry VII arranged for Catherine to get married again, this time to Harry. Because Catherine had been married to Harry's brother, they had to get special permission from the Pope to marry each other. When the Pope agreed to give this special permission, Harry and Catherine got engaged. But before the two could marry, Henry VII died. Harry became King Henry VIII at the age of 17. 2 months later, he married Catherine. Now the two could have sons. The crown would pass peacefully on to a little boy who could become Henry IX. The years went by. Catherine had a baby daughter named Mary, but little Henry IX never appeared. Henry VIII grew more and more worried. A girl couldn't inherit his throne. He needed a son. When Catherine became too old to have any more children, Henry VIII was desperate. What would he do? He could only have a son now if he had another wife. He even picked out the wife he'd like to have, a beautiful young lady-in-waiting at the court, Anne Boleyn. But no one got divorced back in those days. So Henry VIII could only marry Anne if Catherine died. And Catherine was perfectly healthy. So Henry VIII thought of another solution. He had only been able to marry Catherine in the first place because the Pope gave him special permission to marry his dead brother's wife. If the Pope would only say that the special permission didn't count, he could act as though he and Catherine had never really been married. But the Pope put his foot down and refused to take his permission back. Henry and Catherine had been married for 18 years. It was too late for Henry to announce that he had never really been Catherine's husband. Nothing Henry could say would change the Pope's mind. So when Henry heard the new ideas of Martin Luther, he was delighted. After all, Martin Luther said that the Pope was wrong to allow indulgences. Henry was quick to agree. And then Henry announced that if the Pope was wrong about indulgences, he was just as likely to be wrong about Henry's marriage. As a matter of fact, the Pope might be wrong about all sorts of things. So Henry declared that English Christians no longer had to obey the Pope. Instead, they had to obey Henry, who was not only the King of England, but also the supreme head of the church in England. As the supreme head of the church in England, Henry VIII decided that he could declare his own marriage over. Naturally, the Pope was furious, but powerful English noblemen supported Henry. They didn't want to see another civil war over the English throne, and they were willing to say that Henry was the head of the English church if that would get Henry an heir to the throne. So Henry sent Catherine away and married Anne Boleyn. In order to get his way, he created a whole new church, the Church of England. From now on, the Church of England would be separate from the Catholic Church of Rome. Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII lived together happily, for a little while. Soon, Anne Boleyn had a baby, but her baby was a girl named Elizabeth. Now Henry had two daughters, but still no sons. He hoped that Anne would have a baby boy, but when she didn't, Henry had her head chopped off. 2 weeks after Anne was beheaded, Henry married another girl, Jane Seymour. A year and a half later, Jane Seymour had a little boy named Edward. Henry finally had his son, but he no longer had a wife. Jane Seymour died not long after her baby was born. Henry VIII didn't mourn his wife for very long before he decided to get married again. He sent artists all around Europe to paint the pictures of the princesses he might marry. When he saw the picture of a beautiful German princess named Anne of Cleves, he pointed to it. "Bring me this woman," he said. "I'll marry her." Anne of Cleves arrived in England on a cold, gray winter day. Henry rushed out to meet her, but when he saw her, he realized that the painter had made her picture far too pretty. Anne was nothing like her portrait. "She looks like a horse," Henry exclaimed. But the wedding had already been planned. Henry was afraid that Anne's relatives would be angry with England if he didn't marry her, so he went through with the marriage. Afterwards, though, he announced that he would never live with her. Since he was the supreme head of the English church, he could declare that his own marriage was over, and he did. Anne left Henry's castle very happily. After all, Henry VIII wasn't exactly a handsome prince anymore. He had gotten older, and he was extremely fat. 3 weeks later, Henry married a young girl named Catherine Howard. Would you like to guess what happened to Catherine Howard? Henry had her beheaded, too. Less than a year later, Henry VIII got married for the last time. Now he was an old man and often sick. His new wife, Catherine Parr, was a good nurse. She took care of him when he was ill and watched over his three children. She was still alive when Henry VIII died. Today, Henry VIII is best remembered for his six wives, Catherine of Aragon, Anne Boleyn, Jane Seymour, Anne of Cleves, Catherine Howard, and Catherine Parr. There's even a little verse to remind you what happened to each wife. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived.